AI alone is not enough. The whole business model needs to shift. And it's not a cookie-cutter solution.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is about how AI can help in making a digital transformation more successful. Something I see a lot is companies confusing digitization with digital transformation. Digitization is simply digitizing existing processes, whereas a digital transformation is transforming the organization and using digital as an enabler. Now, digital transformation, I'm talking about my version, which is transformation, is more than simple digitization, and it's critical to ensure continued growth for companies in an increasingly competitive digital world. So in addition to revenue growth and new value shift models future-proofing the company, if done well, there are some key additional benefits. We can understand the customer more in order to provide more engagement. We can provide more value and value-added customization for customers. We have the ability to reach customers within regulatory environments in a compliant way. We can increase financial performance, and we have the ability to track metrics and performance more easily. Now, if we look at pharma, and we'll divide this into customers, pharma, competition, and new approaches. So for customers, we see that our customers now have access to a lot more information than ever before. They're self-served and aware. They are influenced by trusted connections in their network, but they expect immediate and personalized responses. Unfortunately, most pharma brands are not customer first, and they don't really provide a strong customer experience. If we look at pharma in the environment, you know, COVID accelerated digitization, no question, but most of what happened was digitizing existing processes. This is not strategically enough to keep pharma thriving in the coming years. And if we look at competition, most companies, pharma companies, see other pharma companies and biotech as competition. But for some reason, they are neglecting the fact that Google is now a pharmaceutical company with an R&D facility for drugs in San Francisco. Amazon is already creating cancer vaccines. And Apple is creating lots of different things. They're working in diabetes and other areas. I actually went to a networking event at Chief last night for the pharma and biotech industry. And it was very interesting to see people from Google, Facebook, Meta, Apple, all of these companies were in the pharma biotech networking group. So that was very interesting. And new approaches, if we look at the environment, you know, there's a lot of innovative, unique approaches that are being used now that may reduce pharma's ability to compete effectively in the future. So if we think about different examples, one would be Amy. She is my digital personal assistant, and I interact with her as I would with any other person, but she has one task she focuses on. What she does is avoids the email ping pong that you get when you're scheduling meetings. So I can CC her in and to any email with a client, and I just need to put, Amy, could you schedule this? And she will go ahead and email them without me seeing the emails and essentially ask them when they're free, et cetera, et cetera. The next thing I know, it's in my calendar. So she has access to my calendar. But there's lots of other ways that you can use AI. Another one is digital humans. So taking this a little bit step further. So a digital human is more advanced than a chatbot, and one that I talk about a lot is Amelia. So Amelia is a digital human that can interact on any channel, you know, phone, Slack, text, etc. and she can really do pretty much any job that a human can do that does not require a physical component. So she works as a IT desk support person. She works in customer service in banks and does all sorts of things like that. So there are this whole army of very sophisticated digital assistants that are now being utilized in digital transformations. And so another example is something that a lot of banks are now doing, which is basically when someone goes to the bank website or is using their mobile app, when they're near the bank or doing something relevant to it, they will get a ping about something that's completely relevant to what they're doing. So, for example, if someone is looking for, let me think of an example, remortgaging their home, and they're walking down the street near their bank, they'll suddenly get a ping saying, you know, we've got some great new mortgage rates. Why don't you pop into your bank when you're next near us and get some ideas? And it looks like an amazing coincidence. Look, I'm just outside the bank. I've got a bit of time now. But it's not. It's using AI. And the same thing can be happen with all sorts of things around banks. And banks are doing that quite a bit now. The same thing can be applied to many industries, in fact, where you're getting a lot of customer insight and you're able to make relevant offers to the customer at the point when they may need it. But all of this, of course, requires artificial intelligence. Now, artificial intelligence is essentially the intersection between mathematics and computing. So it's called artificial intelligence because it's kind of, I'm a neuroscientist, remember? It's a little bit like how the brain processes information. In the case of artificial intelligence, it's data. Now, there's many, many different types of artificial intelligence. You've probably heard of natural language processing, which has lots of different subtypes, and certainly ChatGPT is one of those types. And then you've probably heard of machine learning, and there's lots of subtypes of that, like decision trees, artificial neural networks, support vector machines. But under each of these, there's many other subtypes. So, for example, a subtype of artificial neural networks is deep learning. And that can be used for all sorts of things. But one of its particular strengths, particularly in medicine, is identifying things in images. So, for example, image scans of lungs for COVID, brain scans, oncology, tumor scans. It excels in really analyzing those, and it can help diagnose things far more accurately than physicians in many cases. There was a very interesting study done where scans of tumor progression were, scans of tumors were put into a deep learning system, and five senior oncologists had to make a prediction as to whether the tumor would progress, and the AI had to make the same prediction. What happened was the AI was far more accurate than the senior oncologists. So this is an area that's gaining speed because an oncologist may have a huge amount of experience in their field, a senior oncologist at least, but the AI can have access to the lifetimes of 2,000 oncologists that it is learning from. So this earlier diagnostics is becoming a very big area. And in fact, I did an earlier podcast about Grail, which is a company that from a single blood draw in healthy people, well, at least people with no symptoms, it can diagnose over 50 types of cancer from a single blood draw. And it's done the largest clinical trial of its kind because it was only doing it in healthy, seemingly healthy people who had no symptoms. So it was able to collect a huge hundreds of thousands of people in their clinical trial. So this is becoming a very interesting area, and Grail are not the only ones. I have seen other ones as well. If you think about general companies like Uber, they use AI in pretty much everything, not only just in the app in terms of pricing. You know, they do demand pricing. They also look at the routes with real-time traffic analysis. They also have things in the app so that if the driver and the passenger phones jerk at the same time at a certain particular velocity, they realize that there's been an accident that's taken place in that Uber. So there's so many other things. They also use natural language processing for Uber Eats, for menus, lots of other areas. Another company that's interesting is McDonald's. Now, you don't really think of McDonald's as an artificial intelligence company, but in 2019, they spent hundreds of millions on artificial intelligence. And they use it in so many ways now, which has dramatically increased their profitability. They use it in their drive-through menus. They discovered that the weather, the time of day, all sorts of factors change and influence what people are choosing on their menus. So they optimize each menu in each McDonald's based on those factors, and they've been able to see a bigger uptake in a lot of the different things that people are ordering. On top of that, they're using it in their supply chain and numerous other ways. And so that's just a classic old world company that is really transforming a lot of what they're doing with artificial intelligence. Another one is Bank of America. You remember earlier in this podcast, I mentioned Amelia, who's a digital human. Well, the Bank of America have replaced 50% of their customer call center staff with Amelia. They reskinned her and call her Erica, but it is basically Amelia the digital human. So what's very interesting to me about the Bank of America example is, on top of replacing 50% of the call center staff, their customer satisfaction rates have actually gone up. And the reason for that is you don't have the long queues. She can remember every conversation. So it's not just like you've got to look up the bank account and the notes. Everything is there. So it's huge, vastly improved customer experience for them. But she doesn't just work for them. She works for telcos. She works for Bank of Sweden. She speaks, I think, something like 147 languages. Another example is Target. Now, I started talking about this. It's a very old case study. It happened about 10 years ago in 2013. And what happened is Target actually analyzed the purchasing behaviors of people to make predictions about what people are interested in and what they could buy. And they do targeted advertising that way. So in this example, a very angry man came storming into Target one day and he wanted to see the manager. He spoke to the manager and he said that Target were inappropriately targeting his 16-year-old daughter with pregnancy advertising. The manager apologized and said they would do something about that. And then he left. He came back a few days later and was a bit sheepish and apologized to the manager and said, indeed, his 16-year-old daughter was, in fact, pregnant. So what Target decided to do after that incident is actually be a bit more subtle. So they know a lot, as you can see, but they decided to make it less obvious what they knew. So if, for example, that 16-year-old was getting pregnancy targeting, they would then throw in things that are not related to pregnancy as well, such as a lawnmower, a hammer, whatever. So just to make it a little bit less obvious that that's what they're doing, but of course they're still doing it. So why AI within a digital transformation? Well, traditional companies often get replaced and go out of business, or at least dramatically lose profitability compared if a very powerful AI-powered company comes in, or a very clever, maybe not powerful, but they will be. So a great example of this is Barnes & Noble. You know, they were hugely successful, one of the biggest bookstores in the world. And then Amazon came along, fully AI powered. Now Amazon is a giant and Barnes & Noble almost went out of business, but now they're significantly smaller than you could even imagine. They're nothing like they used to be. It's a small sliver of a company now. And another example is Blockbuster. You know, Blockbuster were probably the place to go if you were wanting to watch a video DVD. And then Netflix came along and initially they would put it through the post, but then they added AI in and they became a streaming service and they put Blockbuster out of business. If we think about the automotive sector, you know, Tesla is the world's most valuable car company. And the last time, I'm trying to remember what the year was, but they were at 180 billion. Toyota was the next biggest at around 173 billion. But then the next six companies, Volkswagen, Honda, Daimler, Ferrari, BMW, et cetera, combined were less value than Tesla. And the reason for that is Tesla puts AI in everything. And what's very interesting with Tesla is it's that they collect the customer data of people using their cars. And so they design everything that they can around the customer experience and the customer data. So where does AI fit into a digital transformation? It kind of fits everywhere. If you think about the pharmaceutical industry, my industry, discovery We use AI in discovering new molecules, drug design, in R&D, drug repurposing, drug screening, manufacturing for quality control, improving production, predictive maintenance, for clinical trials in terms of design, recruitment, automated clinical study report writing, for market access, you know, in value pricing, faster reimbursement, and so on, supply chain, detection of counterfeits, warehouse automation, supply chain mapping, regulatory, collating daily guidance and regulations, for medical, intelligent literature monitoring, medical insights, medical guideline management, and so on, for sales, precision HCP targeting, switch prediction, suggestion engines for sales call, whispering agents. And in marketing, there's so many. I mean, that's where I originally started, even though I work across the value chain now. But, you know, key opinion leader identification, which actually is far more accurate than the old-fashioned ways of doing it, which are more based on volume rather than impact. And with AI, you can actually see who are the up-and-coming fresh faces that are not opinion leaders yet, but you should develop the relationships because they will be in the future. HCP segmentation, finding rare disease patients, automated omnichannel marketing that's really personalized by doctors, so many different areas. I could do a podcast just on that. But AI alone is not enough. The whole business model needs to shift. And it's not a cookie cutter solution. You know, I see this time and time again, it drives me crazy, that companies will look at what another company's done in their space and then try and copy it. It shouldn't be like that. You need to look at your company's goals. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? And then you look at your competitors. And I'm not talking just pharmaceutical and biotech competitors. You need to look at your big tech competitors. You need to look at your adjacent competitors. And then you look at your tech enablers like AI and cognitive computing, cloud computing, etc. So digital transformation is a little bit like maneuvering, for a big company at least, a massive container ship. It's very difficult to turn it around. And there's a lot of energy required to get it moving. But once it's underway, all you need is a clear destination, good navigation, and strong leadership. I remember one of my clients who was at Glaxo many years ago was saying, we were talking about this over 20 years ago, and he was saying he feels like it's, you know, when you're trying to do these things, it's a bit like you're on the Titanic and you can see the iceberg and you're spinning the wheel and spinning the wheel. But it's so slow in moving. Now, it doesn't always have to be that way, particularly now. You know, in those days, things were a bit harder because we didn't have all the technologies we have today. We had AI, but we didn't have the breadth and scope of AI that we do today. And enacting this kind of transformation, it doesn't have to come at the cost of day-to-day business or quarterly objectives. You know, with the right strategy and approach, you can actually enact change without disrupting ongoing business or threatening your bottom line. It doesn't require a radical disruption of the value proposition or overhauling the legacy systems in one go. You know, you can actually undergo a successful digital transformation while continuing to thrive in the short term by implementing intelligent, incremental changes in light with overall transformation strategy. So the first step is to really understand your customer. That's the part that a lot of people forget. You know, what matters most for them? Then you're analyzing the different things I talked about, you know, your company, your competitors, the enablers, finding that sweet spot of where they intersect to plot a course from where you are now to where you want to be, keeping a strong focus on the value created for your customer and yourself. And finally, businesses really need to adjust course as new technologies become available and the environment changes. So business model shifts are really critical if you want to grow value. And how this works is you really have to have a business model that could be strained or challenged or actually completely outdated due to shifting market conditions. And basically, accessing a new business model means that you can win within the current marketplace, but you become much more competitive and resilient as the market changes. So there's many different types of ways to shift value. And each of these stages, types of value shifts that I'll mention, have got different types of ways you can approach it underneath each, but I'll just give you the main ones. So a value proposition shift is one. Front stage driven shift is another. a backstage-driven shift is another, and finally, a profit formula-driven shift. So I'll give you three examples, and these are very interesting, and I credit Sabine van der Linden for bringing them to my attention. So the first one is Rolls-Royce. Rolls-Royce, a little bit like pharmaceuticals, you know, it's a car company. They sold cars. Pharmaceuticals sell pills. Don't want to make too strong an analogy, but in some ways, you know, car companies innovated by cutting-edge technology breakthroughs. Pharmaceutical companies innovate by cutting-edge medical breakthroughs. But they had the same kind of business model, which was basically they sell a product. What Rolls-Royce have done is they have added a recurring subscription pricing. So they now charge a fixed dollar per hour of usage based on the usage of the car. So that means that it enables, you know, Rolls-Royce to be getting real-time information about the engines and everything else, but also the consumer pays on use. So if someone buys a Rolls-Royce and they sit in the garage and, you know, take it out on a rare occasion, they won't be paying anywhere near as much as someone who uses it every day. But what this has done is actually increased their revenue to so much more than any other year prior to implementing this change, and they did it seamlessly. Another one is Best Buy. You know, they were actually not in a good place. You know, they were founded in 1966, and they were basically a multinational consumer electrics retailer, and they were under pressure from Amazon, and they were really fighting for survival. And their scaling model at the time was location and scale, a little bit like WeWorks. And these actually start to turn into liabilities because, you know, with the internet and with Amazon, people could access cheaper prices. They basically looked at Best Buy to see what they wanted and they'd complete their purchase at Amazon. So they needed to shift their business model. So just going back one, the Rolls-Royce business model was actually a value proposition shift of product to recurring service, whereas Best Buy is a value proposition of sales to platform. So what they did is they shifted from being retail-led to becoming customer relationship-led. And they also moved into, as most people seem to be, digital health in the smart home market. So they were really enriching the customer experience outside the store with an in-home advisor service, total tech support. They also focused on aging seniors. So they started using AI to monitor the elderly daily living and detect if something's going wrong in interaction. And then they had stores within stores. So Samsung, Microsoft, Google, and others could actually open up inside a Best Buy store, which shifted the cost of showrooming these manufacturers. So their business model allowed a lot of changes and it impacted their bottom line dramatically by making these transformations. And a final one I'll mention in this is Adobe. So Adobe were way ahead of the curve. You know, in 2012, they started their new business model. And by 2019, they were generating 89% of their revenue from recurring subscription fees, so selling the Creative Cloud Suite to the mass market. And from when they did that, their revenues increased year on year by 26%. So they moved from a transactional to subscription revenue. They moved from sales to recurring service proposition, from transactional to long-term relationship, and from customer service acquisition every few years to important frontline customer acquisition. So those were three great examples. Again, Sabine van der Linden told me about them, that I think really illustrate these business proposition changes and transformations that you can actually do that make a vast difference in both your competitiveness and your profitability. So if we think about the changing environment in any company, we need, but, you know, I also really like to focus on pharma, but if we think about it, the first thing you need to think about is customer first. You know, Amazon's motto has always been customer first. And that is the key to their success. We need to be customer first focused. Secondly, we need to be innovation and business mindset focused so we can add value to the customers and to the business. And then we really need to deliver a strong customer experience. You know, think Amazon, think Zappos, think Apple, Uber, Disney, and so on. So hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. And if you have any questions around digital transformation and AI, please reach out to me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.